Thou might don't podcast. Every day click podcast. Purpose stuff rolling up podcast. Podcast. Sipping on purpose stuff. Sipping on purpose stuff. Sipping on purpose stuff. And how's it going? Sip It On Purple. You are listening to episode 006 of the Sip It On Purple podcast. And you just heard me raise the volume on my computer because I want you to be able to hear the man coming out of the other side of the speakers. Loretta, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well.
That does not sound... That's the least enthusiastic it's going well in podcast history.
Yes, I'm...
hiding something.
Near collapse is getting a lot of my attention here.
Oh, it's getting a lot of my attention too. There's a Red Sox fan on my floor, and he's also a Patriots fan, and it's just the most fun thing I've really ever witnessed.
Yeah, it was a tough day yesterday, at least until the Red Sox salvaged the second part of that doubleheader.
It seems the best team in Boston right now are the streaking Boston College Eagles who knocked off UMass this weekend.
Right. That was quite a victory.
And BC fans were going nuts. I'm still following all of them from
yeah, me too.
From when we played them a few weeks ago, and they were like freaking out. It was like, it was fun to watch. Excitement over, you know, UMass.
They're now confident they can get to 4 or 5 wins on the season, so they've got that going for them.
Meanwhile, none of us are confident about anything because we just lost to Army, and Army just lost to Ball State by a lot of points. What was the final? 40-something?
I believe it was 48-21.
Not bad.
31-0 at halftime.
But you put up 21 points on the Cardinals in the Cardinals' nest.
I believe that's the same amount of points Indiana scored against them.
Oh, Indiana is just such a disappointment. Indiana and Minnesota, like, it's not even surprising when you see them lose. At this point, like, to, like, funny teams. Indiana got manhandled by North Texas. The Mean Green.
Yeah, that final score was just, I think they only ended up losing by 3. But I think North Texas pretty much just went into the Pat Fitzgerald blowout style mode when he gets up by big in the second half and he just runs 3 times and punts.
I'm not sure if it was this year. North Texas was definitely number 120 on the 120 team countdown at pre-snap read a few years back.
I actually looked at their results, and they did win 3 games last year.
That's pretty good. You know, I mean, it's happened to Northwestern in the past on a lot of occasions. I'm pretty sure it's happened to us in basketball in the past, but I'm not going to look it up.
Losing to what, Sun Belt teams?
No, winning 3 games in a season. I know we've definitely only won. We've won one in a Big Ten season, but how low did we go?
We've won 0 in a Big Ten season in Kevin O'Neill's last year, but he did manage to win 5 non-conference games.
That's solid. When you put that in Boston College football context, that's a great season right now. Actually, I shouldn't make fun of them. They've been to 13 straight bowl games. So, on to the whole Northwestern thing. I was terrified of the University of Illinois for a little bit, because, you know, they won a game against the right team, and Northwestern is, you know, eh. But the whole them barely beating Western Michigan team, no offense to Western Michigan, who played a good game, but that sort of gives me a little bit of hope and optimism. And then there's Persa.
Right.
Persa's back. Officially.
How will he do after his long layoff?
Oh, no.
That's the big question that will pretty much determine whether Northwestern is going to win this game or not.
Yeah.
If Dan Persa does not return to at least something near his past elite playing self, then it's difficult to see Northwestern winning this football game.
I think it mainly comes down to how Cade Coulter will play at wide receiver. He's probably going to see some time. I don't see any way Dan Persa plays an entire game.
Right, that does seem unlikely.
And right now, Trevor Siemian's not on the depth chart, even though he came in for the last few series against Army. Who knows what's going on with anything? Mass confusion. It is good to feel pessimistic about a game again. After so long being optimistic. Our first 3 podcasts were just, we're probably going to win this week. Actually, not against BC. I thought we were going to win against BC, but you were wrong in thinking otherwise. And now it definitely feels great to be a major pessimist, because that's what we're used to.
Right. Illinois's got some pretty scary things going for it. Their run defense is, I believe I saw a stat, they've let up 220 rushing yards for the whole season in four games.
Yeah, but to be fair, like, hopefully that just convinces us not to run the ball. Like,
right.
I'm hoping that scares the Schmidt out of us to put. And I didn't plan that out ahead of time. That just worked well. Yeah, I hope that scares the Schmidt out of us. Because right now he's listed at number one in our depth chart, despite, you know, all the, you know, Mike Trumpiness.
Right. We've seen some. Did seem like last season there was a concerted effort to establish the run, oftentimes, which often proved to be an exercise in futility. There was much consternation about Mick McCall, especially after the loss to Purdue. But the year before that, when Kafka's senior year, they didn't really try to run the ball very much. Kafka had a lot of games where he had 40, 50, 60, and then even, of course, the 78
yeah.
pass performance in the some in Tampa that I try not to remember.
Yeah, but, and then the however, he's an NFL caliber quarterback, so, you know, when you have that type of player. I'm just saying NFL caliber because he's now the Eagles' starting quarterback.
Yeah, is he officially going to start, or are they going to free Vince Young after Kafka had that tough show against the Giants?
To be fair, I wasn't watching the game, but I'm assuming at that point in the game they were in full-out air raid, and the Giants were in full-out no more passes, and then he got intercepted. Like, I haven't seen the game or the highlights, but I hope that's what happened.
I didn't see the first interception. I saw the second one, which he just... There were a lot of comparisons to Rex Grossman I was seeing from people.
Well,
Grossman had the tendency to just... Grossman's move was the sort of F it, I'm going deep. It was one of his favorite moves, and he just bombed it down the field. And that's apparently what he did on both interceptions. I saw the second one, but the second one, there was only 2 minutes left in the game. They're down by two touchdowns, and he just basically threw it up for grabs in triple coverage. And the first one, I think, was somewhat similar to that.
Well, hopefully better things from him. You know, he looked good the first time against the Falcons, and then not so good. The whole not having Deion Sanders to be able to fly into my living room and throw games on TV kind of has been killing me recently with not being able to watch Kafka or the Jets out here in Chicago.
Oh, that's tough, yes, being out of market.
Yeah, and
yes,
streams,
I was liking college, it's not out of market.
I'm really good at finding illegal streams, but they always, you know, disappear about halfway through the game. That's one of the problems about Northwestern is we're not important enough to get people to illegally stream us most of the time.
Right.
Like, so,
especially during basketball season.
Yeah, so there were a few times where I was in class, and unless the game was on ESPN, actually they did have ESPN3, I had to, like, score center or something terrible. It was awful. But back to football, specifically Northwestern and not the Philadelphia Eagles. But, you know, not only are they good at, you know, run defense, they're also, you know, they ran for 500 yards against Northwestern last year. And obviously 330 of those were Mikel LeShore, and he's now in the NFL, although he tore his ACL. But that scares me, especially 2 weeks after you play Army. They, you know, run for 380 yards, and Illinois has Shieldhouse.
Right, Shieldhouse is certainly a more dangerous player than Trent Steelman.
Don't say that about Trent Steelman. He's dangerous enough to – he's dangerous to our nation's enemies, and that's enough for me.
That's very true.
Whereas Nathan Shieldhouse is mainly only dangerous to – Western Michigan, and of course Northwestern, but no, he's fast and also throws things. But last year they didn't even need to throw against Northwestern. It was kind of, it just kind of hurt my feelings that they didn't even try to throw the ball.
Right, I think they did a couple times in that trick play.
They threw fourteen passes. Yeah, their first 10 plays were passes, and they were already up. Already had 21 points. I mean, were runs. and they had scored three touchdowns already. And then they decided to run an end-around pass, which turned into a pick six. One of the more confusing coaching decisions that I've ever seen.
Right. That was, you know, the word around Illinois is that Zook is delegated to his coordinators. Let them, you know, do the play calling on offense and defense. But I think maybe Zook might have called in veto power on that one.
Yeah, because that was fascinating. So at that point, they were like 10 rushes for over 200 yards and also 0 for 1 with an interception for a touchdown. I hope they run that play a lot because right now I'm not too confident in Northwestern's defense. Who stayed on the field for 40 minutes.
Right, we're so happy about the run defense after Boston College.
And then you realize that's against, you know, we were hyping up Andre Williams, that second-string running back, but, yeah.
Right, a lot of the BC fans stopping by were very high on Andre Williams.
Yeah.
They were telling us that he was, you know, more upside than Montel Harris, who was the preseason player of the year in the ACC. He did not live up to the hype. After that first long run he had, he was pretty much a non-factor.
Yeah, Mikel LeShore would have housed that and then kept going for another two touchdowns somehow in some more sort of weird double field. I'm going to try not to take too much away from the Illinois game because another thing we should remember is that game, much like this one, much like the Army one and the other games we just saw, did not feature Daniel Persa. If I knew his middle name, I would have said it there, but I don't. I think that makes me a bad Northwestern blogger. It always makes you sound official when you say the middle name.
I think that's kind of creepy to know Dan Persa's middle name.
No, I don't know Dan Persa's middle name. Hopefully, we could look it up right now, but point is I just called him Daniel, and we're moving from there. What do you expect from him?
I really have no idea. I do think that word is that he's not as mobile as he once was.
Yeah.
And the mobility was certainly a big part of his game. Something that he was, if his first receiver wasn't open, he would generally look to run. You know, he wouldn't really, as a lot of college quarterbacks, you know, they're not like NFL quarterbacks who can stand in there and look at, you know, second, third, and fourth progressions. The college offenses aren't that complex. But Persa was a guy that, you know, he dropped back. If his first guy wasn't open, he'd just start running around and make plays, just sort of as an improviser.
Well, I think
and
a lot of
I'm
that...
I'm worried that he is not really going to be able to do that anymore.
I wonder how much of that was because Northwestern's offensive line was just terrible last year, and they look a lot better this year. He really didn't have that much time, and then he did, and he was Dan Persa out there. Obviously, we only pretend to be Northwestern football experts on the Sippin' on Purple podcast. But even if we were experts, like, there's no way to know what the Dan Persa experience will entail. And we're not even hearing how long he's going to play in the game, whether he's going to play, you know, the entire game, whether he's just going to play a few drives. We can rule out Evan Watkins, but we can't really rule
poor
out...
Poor
Evan Watkins.
I wonder if he's going to end up transferring at the end of the season.
I hope not. I think Evan Watkins will have to switch... We'll have to hand him over to another fan base. I don't want to see that happen.
He might go to the FCS route. Northwestern had a guy back in the day named Tony Stoss. It's supposed to be the... succeed. He was a backup to Zach Kustak, I think, or he was around that area in the early 2000s. He was supposed to succeed Kustak, but then he was supposed to be a pretty good recruit, too, because they were, you know, contending for the Big Ten Championship. But then he lost his job to Brett Bazin, and then he transferred to Montana or something. So maybe Watkins will share a similar fate. Maybe he'll stick around and just enjoy his Northwestern education.
I know that Arby Fields tore up the JUCO baseball circuit in his year in between Northwestern and LSU, so maybe Evan Watkins can pull a, you know.
Did he really?
Yeah. Oh, dominated the California JUCO leagues.
Wow.
Kyle Rowley didn't even play for the FCS team, JUCO team he was at last year. He he's ready to dominate over at St. Mary's. Well, you have the...
That's going to be curious. We'll definitely keep track of how Kyle Rabel is doing at St. Mary's.
And I'm going to feel much the same way I feel about Mike Kafka with the Eagles. It's like watching your son, you know, who's finally grown up and is now playing in the West Coast Conference after all those years of, you know, mediocre Big Ten performance.
I wonder if he's going to come back in great shape, like be 50 pounds lighter and just, like, all just completely
pure ripped. Pure muscle.
Like bigger Trevor Mbakwe or something, just terrifying. Just dominate the West Coast Conference like Lamar Samhan.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got some pretty big shoes to fill. Not literal shoes, because he's really tall and can probably fill them easily. But, yeah, I'm curious about that. But looking at Illinois, you obviously expressed concern about the run defense, but and other things, and pretty much everything is concerning. They did beat Arizona State, and I think Arizona State is pretty reasonably good. And they have a really tall quarterback. So Evan Watkins, I think I said this on an earlier podcast, wouldn't even be a good, you know, substitute because, you know, he's so tall and that's his skill set. I'd feel bad about making fun of the Watkins tall thing, but, like, the players yell that at him in practice when he's playing, which I think is the funniest thing possible.
Really?
Yeah. I don't follow him on Twitter, but he apparently, like, has, like, lots of interaction with fake Evan Watkins.
That's really weird.
He's self-aware, which is scary.
I'd be really weirded out if I was a college kid and there was a fake Twitter account.
Fake Loretta? Can someone get on that? Can we get a fake Loretta Twitter out there? Just to complain about gambling and... You lost a lot of Lundy's this week, and also Full Tilt Poker still hasn't given you your money. And never will.
Yeah, that's bad news. No, I didn't lose too many Lundy's. LSU, Les Miles saved me. That was one of my bigger plays of the week.
Oh, yeah. So I think it was only two. Had a lot of Lundy's.
I think it was only two or something. So
well, the person who's really probably worried is Dennis Lundy. You know, it's bad enough that... You know, did he ever go to jail?
I don't know. Probably not.
I think he just lost his scholarship and, you know, was banned forever.
That's what he's doing.
Pete Rose.
Maybe we can get a Purple Mafia profile from, like, the Post.
From Dennis Lundy?
I'd read that for sure.
Well, I think it's like a Pete Rose thing where he's, you know, he would obviously be in the Northwestern, you know, Hall of Fame, but, you know, because he was famous and played moderately famous for gambling on sports, and I think that's what fame is about, at least in your case, that's what it's about. But he can't come back because he's shamed himself and the school. It's really a sad story.
Right, he's been taken out of the record books. I remember he had a Northwestern record. I remember reading about this. He was one of, I think he was the first, him and somebody else, it might have been Darnell Autry as a freshman, or maybe someone else, they were the first Northwestern players in a long time to both go over 100 yards rushing in a game.
But then it never happened.
And then two other Northwestern running backs did it, and they were like, oh, it's the first time since the 60s that two guys have gone on. I was like, no, actually, Dennis Lundy was involved.
There was also a basketball scandal, too, right? Around the same time?
Kenneth, don't call me Deion Lee. Changed his name to Deion Lee in the middle of his career. It was Kenneth.
But Lee's would have been a much worse gambling unit. I think I'm glad
you
went
with Lundy. No one would have known what I was talking about. Lundy's, there's no one else named Lundy's.
Because who are you talking about? Robert E.? Are you talking about Derek? Carlos,
right, all sorts of possibilities.
David, it could be. I mean, you would clear out the Asian Li. No. There's still some Lees. I'm glad we went with Lundy's.
Right.
Even though you're starting to slowly lose all the Lundy's with your hubris. I don't know what the line is for Illinois.
Seven. Illinois favored by seven. At least I saw that yesterday.
Preview, where might the Lundy's be going in this matchup?
I'm not sure. Seven is just one of those borderline numbers. If it moves to 7.5 or 6.5 is, you know, a big difference since seven is popular. margin of victory in college football.
Yeah, so there's a pretty decent push value there. I don't do the gambling besides streak for the cash, so I'm an idiot. But I don't know. That seems Northwestern. Yeah, I'm not going to predict a Northwestern victory, and my apologies to all of the people who base their happiness over what I think is going to happen, which you shouldn't, because I'm wrong pretty frequently. But I wouldn't give, like, I feel decently confident that we could lose by less than 7. I'm going to go ahead and say an Illinois win, though. In my heart of hearts, I like think there's a chance for Northwestern to pull it out, but you know, only because of the Western Michigan thing. But you know, they went out and beat a decent Arizona State team at home. We're also playing them at home. We're probably a lot worse than Arizona State. And I don't like our chances.
Clearly, a worse team than Arizona State.
Yeah.
If we went and played at Arizona State, we'd probably be at least 10 points.
Vontaze Burfict would be the best defensive player. He would be like close to Pat Fitzgerald. No, I wouldn't say that actually. But he's so scary. I'm very frightened every night that Vontaze Burfict is going to break into my room and just stand over me.
Did you see that picture of him?
Yeah, just pointing.
Pointing at the Matt Barkley.
Poor Matt Barkley. Like,
I feel like Matt Barkley's been there forever. He probably still has like 2 years of eligibility.
Yeah, definitely. He'll be there for a few decades.
He's like going on. It's like how Draymond Green is still going to have another year at Michigan State this year.
Oh,
Draymond
definitely.
Green is on that, he's on like 80-year plan.
Draymond Green's like a sophomore at this point.
When he was a sophomore, he was being talked about as, you know, leader, team leader.
That's one of the things about Michigan State is they have these guys. You know, they've been consistently successful with 4-year guys. Like,
right.
Like when they're playing, their good players are like. They're not, you know, making the leap after. I can't think of many people who. Can
Zach
you think of
Randolph
any? Zach Randolph, but not after his freshman year. Like when you look at like the guys who are always like, you know, everyone's always a senior there, and that's kind of rare to like look around and like.
Right. Who's the last like real, pretty good NBA player to come out of Michigan State?
You're not going to talk smack about. Mateen Cleaves, are you? I love me some Mateen.
Right.
Well, Jason Richardson and Zach Randolph. But,
right.
Yeah.
I guess Shannon Brown.
Shannon Brown, but he didn't look like he was going to have a career like this, would he? Maurice Anger did not pan out. Anyway,
yeah,
look at what we're talking about. I should note that we still have a yet-to-be-determined guest. We record this podcast into segments, and I still don't know who our guest is, but hopefully they'll talk to us about Illinois football. But right now, if you're making your pick, you don't sound overwhelmingly confident.
No, I haven't really thought about this game for now, but it's hard to see. I just think there's so many questions versus health. It's just
whoever it is, they're going to have to throw a lot. That almost worked for Western Michigan. Like, just, like, passing attack. He threw 35 times in the first half. And if the only quarterback at Northwestern I'm confident to do that is Dan Persa. Luckily, he's healthy. Who knows how healthy. Luckily, he's still good. I still think we'll just have trouble stopping Shieldhouse. If I had to throw something out there, I'd say Illinois by like something like 30 to like 20 or something like that, something in that range. I haven't put out a number, but I'm gonna go ahead and give Illinois some sort of reasonably sized victory like that.
This is definitely one of those situations where the time of possession is going to be important. That was something that people talked about a lot when Bruce went out last season. So. You know, the offense didn't have any sustained drives, and that put a lot of pressure on the defense, and I think that's going to remain true here. Illinois is just going to run zone read after zone read and, you know, just eat up yards because they have a lot of talented running backs.
They were killing it on the option against Western Michigan. Shieldhouse really knows how to run the option, and, like, Northwestern just played against option team. That obviously it's a different thing, but yeah, Shieldhouse Keepers could be a scary image. So I don't like things.
Hopefully Bryce McDonald is motivated that after his he said mean things about him on the podcast and he's heard this and he's going to play a Pat Fitzgerald type game.
Yeah, where's number 51? I saw him today. He still looks scary. Scary and large. So that's good.
Right.
Not Vince Brown level scary. Being in a room with Vince Brown or being anywhere in a 100 to 1,000 foot. If I was ranking scary people, like Vince Brown and Vontaze Burfict, and notice the same initials. If your last name starts with a B, and you name your child something like Vance, which was the first, or Van, or Victor. No, Victor's not going to work. There's never been a scary Victor. Or, I'm not... My point is, Vince Brown is scary. And we have a guest coming on. And I think that's a good place to end it.
Absolutely.
All right. The Loretta absolutely is going to be my ringtone at some point in time.
I haven't gone to too many of those this time, have I? I was just self-conscious about it after the first one.
You've gotten less absolute with your thoughts, but, you know, I still like it every once in a while. I think I'm going to make a techno remix of it. and I'm going to make...
my catchphrase.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Break it.
Welcome to Havana. Smoking Cubanos with Castro and Cabanas. Viva Mexico. Cubano. Dominicano. All the plugs that I know. Driving Benzes. With no benefits. Not bad, huh? For some immigrants. Build your fences. We digging tunnels. Can't you see we getting money up under you? Can't you see the private jets flying over you? Maybach bumper stickery. What we're overdue. Day is chilling. Yay is chilling. What more can I say? We killing them. Hold up before we end this campaign. As you can see, we done bodied the damn lanes. Lord, please let them accept the things that can't change. And pray that all of their pain be champagne.
And welcome back, everybody. I am joined here by Joe Katsunis of Hail to the Orange. I earlier said that we hadn't announced our guest yet because we recorded the other half of the podcast on, like, Monday, and I was too lazy to get in touch with people until, like, after that. But, yes, it's Joe Katsunis from Hail to the Orange. How's it going, Joe? Things good?
Oh, yeah, everything's good on my end. Happy to see there's one more Big Ten podcast that I can listen to at work during the day.
But there's one more really bad one, though. This is, trust me, you haven't listened to this. You're getting into a horrible, horrible area of internet podcasting. I mainly spend about 40 minutes just talking about how bad it is. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyway, the Illinois Fighting Illini are surprisingly 4-0. That doesn't happen to either of our teams very often.
No, this is the first time since 1951 that the Illini have started off 4-0. And the first time since 2001 they've actually swept their non-conference season. So things are pretty exciting, even though everyone who is an Illinois fan knows that the only opponent of any real worth the Illini have defeated are Arizona State. But then again, they just beat USC last weekend, so that's not nothing.
They have Vontaze Burfict, who's the scariest person of all time. That's a good win. And the thing about Northwestern and apparently Illinois, too, is you get those out-of-conference schedules and you say, we should win four games, but we're probably going to go 3-1 anyway, just because that's how the world works.
This is a team that's probably... Illinois has gone 2-2 in its non-conference, I think, the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been ugly.
That whole No More Missouri thing. That used to be Missouri would just – I would, like, look at the Big Ten standings, and it was always Illinois 0-1, and everybody else 1-0, and it was unnecessary.
And the worst thing is those were some of the best single games Illinois would have all year. They put up yards on those Missouri teams, and they, I think, lost most of those games by about one possession. They lost no more than 10 points in any of those games.
Yeah. So the whole Arizona State thing worked out, though. So who should we be kind of thinking of? The team that, you know, beat a pretty decent Arizona State squad, I should say, or the team that just, like, kind of almost sort of lost to Western Michigan?
That's a good question. I have been following a Ron Zook-coached football team for, God, he's been here since 2005, 6 seasons.
Try not to think about it. Just try to numb the pain.
This is a completely unpredictable team. This is a team that last year, you know, solidly beat Penn State and then lost to Minnesota. Like, you cannot accurately predict how Illinois is going to do in any given year.
I feel like
it's baffling. Illinois could easily come out this Saturday and have a very dominant game on the defensive end and, you know, allow less than 200 yards of total offense, or they could have somebody pass for 350 yards on them. They're both just as likely, it seems like.
I feel like Illinois, like Ron Zook, the thing about Ron Zook is he's like just such a source of people making fun of him, and yet things seem to turn out pretty well sometimes for, you know, Ron Zook coach teams. You know, obviously the whole Rose Bowl thing. How does an Illinois fan base feel about, you know, definitely the most made fun of Big Ten coach and just for general craziness?
We're happy, I guess, in the regards that we have actually had more success, it seems like, in fits and starts under Ron Zook than, what, John Makovic? I mean, very few coaches have taken the Fighting Illini to multiple bowl games over their coaching tenure. I mean, Ron Zook has two now, and that puts him next to Ron Turner, who I think took them to two bowl games in 6 years, and Tepper, I think, only had about one bowl game in his tenure. So, and, you know, it could be worse. You could be coached by somebody like Danny Hope, who, you know...
Oh, dear God.
Hasn't had a really good winning season, and he also isn't that particularly interesting. So at the very least, even if we're going to be, you know, on a terrible losing streak, we still have Ron Zook, you know, to sort of get us attention.
Yeah, I feel like Northwestern and Illinois almost have a similar thing going on where we're finally turning into... I mean, Northwestern has obviously always been worse than, you know, Illinois for long stretches of time, but... You know, it's still a somewhat even series over the long scheme of things, and both teams are, like, kind of getting into consistent mediocrity level, I feel like, which is, like, a good place to be for Northwestern and Illinois.
Yeah, and one of the things I like about Pat Fitzgerald is that he is literally, like, every single, you know, college fanboy's dream. Like, if you're a fan of a team like Northwestern, you know, the team that is always the underdog in the conference. You always want that one good player to come through your school, then become a really good coach, and then refuse all other offers from bigger schools to continue coaching at that program. I mean, that you can have coaches that stay in, you know, in town 1 year or 3 years or whatever and get their team on the map, but then as soon as a team like LSU opens up, they're gone.
Yeah, he's the anti-Kiffin. So to speak. Yeah. But no, I definitely think, yeah, that's kind of happening in both Northwestern and Illinois. And I liked your post earlier. It's basically talking about how this is like such a contrived rivalry, Northwestern and Illinois, and I totally agree. Like the teams talk it up and the media talks it up, but Iowa's, Northwestern's like football rival right now, like obviously we're not their number one rival, but like that's the team we dislike, and like Illinois, eh?
Yeah, it's funny because Illinois' two biggest rivals, according to Illinois fans, are Michigan and Ohio State. And if you ask a Michigan or Ohio State fan where Illinois ranks on their, you know, hatred list,
like eighth.
Yeah, it's like, you guys really consider us a big rival? Like, yeah, we hate you. Like, okay.
Well, I will say...
Yeah, you ask anybody in Champaign, like, who they want to beat once a year if they beat nobody else, they're going to say Michigan, or they're going to say Ohio State. It's not going to be Northwestern.
I don't think there's a dislike between Northwestern and Illinois. There's just kind of like, I sort of want to beat them because they're in the same state as me. It's pretty low-key rivalry. The one time I've actually hated Illinois was my freshman year when Dimitri McCamey hit a last-second shot in Welsh Ryan Arena, and I, oh, God, we were up like 15, and Illinois just came back, and I was like, okay, I'm not cool with Illinois right now.
Yeah, but, actually, I have a lot more animosity toward Northwestern basketball than I do toward Northwestern football.
Really?
Well, yeah. Luka Mrkovic?
Oh, yeah. Luka Mrkovic, I've slowly realized that the entire world hates Luka Mrkovic. He plays off of making people hate him so much. He's also, like, got kind of like a Soviet Rocky villain vibe that he plays off of. And he does the finger guns, too. And he
must break
him. Yeah. He does the European three hands whenever he hits a three, and he wears a mask.
Yeah. Does he actually even need the mask anymore?
He doesn't need the mask anymore. Can I blow your mind, though? Now he's bald. He shaved his head. He's becoming more and more Drago at whenever he can. It's great. But Northwestern football and Illinois football kind of, I guess there's just not enough here for us to be mad at.
It's funny because they compare it to other, interstate rivalries where you have like Michigan, Michigan State, Alabama, Auburn, that sort of thing. It should fit like that, but Illinois and Northwestern are not like the two state schools. Northwestern is a very much, it sort of draws nationally.
Yeah.
And Illinois is a very state school. There are far more out-of-state people at Northwestern than there are at Illinois. And there's not this sort of like natural, like you grow up as an either-or type of thing.
Yeah.
Because in Chicago area, it's every single Big Ten team.
Yeah. When I meet kids from like downstate, like their entire high school went to Illinois. And they were, like, the one kid who went to Northwestern. So, like, they're kind of the, like, there's no, like, yeah, like, culture of that thing. There is this funny thing of how both teams, or Northwestern wants to be Chicago's Big Ten team.
Yes.
And, like, Illinois, first of all, clearly, if you're, like, a neutral college sports fan, or neutral, like, pro sports fan from Chicago, and someone asked you, what's your favorite, college football team? They'd say Illinois or Notre Dame, but probably Illinois first because that's the name of the state they live in. And, like, you guys get all of your basketball recruits, all the good basketball recruits out of Chicago. And Northwestern has had, like, one Chicago public league player in the past, like, 50 years in Juice Thompson. And then the whole Martez Wilson saying that we are Chicago's Big Ten team last year, which I forgot about until, like, Monday. I think it's funny, but I want to be Chicago's Big Ten team, even though we're not.
I know, well, first of all, neither of them are in Chicago. Even though Evanston is near Chicago, it's not Chicago. I guess, if Chicago State University had a football team, they would be Chicago's college football team, but...
Or DePaul.
Oh, yeah. Less said about DePaul.
Chicago's disowned Big East basketball team.
Yeah, but, I mean, the University of Illinois is... I don't have the number in front of me, but it's a huge amount of people are from the Chicago area that attend the University of Illinois. And it is a much more Chicago-oriented sort of, like, culture, I guess. I mean, there are just as many people that fill up the bars for Bears games as they do for, college football games down here.
Yeah, at least we tried it with the Wrigley thing, but that was really fun, but not so fun for the whole football thing. I didn't like that.
To this day, I can't imagine who screwed up not realizing there wasn't enough room for a football field in there.
I think they thought it would somehow work. I really did enjoy watching a player in, I think it was some SEC game this week, just go head first into a brick wall after scoring a touchdown. And I was like, that's what we wanted to happen. But that was silly. And the whole one-way thing. But let's actually talk about football, because I think that's why people like, read, and listen to this. Football. Illinois' defense against the run, scary. Luckily for me, Northwestern doesn't really like to run. What is that kind of, I guess, how terrified should I be of the Illinois defense?
Well, the front seven is by far the strong point of the defense. It has helped that Illinois has those low rushing defense numbers because every single team they've come up against are primarily passing teams. All their teams have thrown like 2-1 more than they've ran. And part of that is probably because they weren't getting much traction on the ground. But this is a team that comes around from front seven pressure. It's going to be defensive tackles and defensive ends that are going to try and get into the backfield and stop the play before it reaches the line of scrimmage. So Jonathan Brown has become the sudden standout player for Illinois, and he had a real huge game against Arizona State. He was involved in something like, I think it was like 6.5 tackles for loss, an interception, a couple sacks. It was you know, just a beast of a game. And he basically won that game by himself because it was, you know, won by a field goal. But, you know, you also got guys like Whitney Merciless who are...
Oh, I was going to bring that up. I can never get tired of having a player named Whitney Merciless on my team.
It is a great football name.
It's hopefully... I haven't put up the name of the week poll yet, but Whitney Merciless was the winner a few years ago of the Name of the Year competition, so he's a sipping on purple favorite. Also, though, what scares me, although thank the dear Lord that Mikel Ashour is no longer in college, because I'm just generally scared of him. You guys still have a pretty decent ground game, and also Nathan Shielhouse, who is, you know, like pretty good at the whole being a dual threat quarterback thing. Do you predict more or less than 519 yards rushing for Illinois this week?
I'm going to have to go with less. That's not a very common occurrence, I guess, I would say. If for no other reason, they don't have a go-to back right now. Jason Ford was supposed to be the guy coming out of camp. He had a good game against Arizona State, but he was terrible last week. You know, a lot of lost yards and just not hitting his gaps, and he had a fumble, and he was basically benched in the second half with the exception of just pass blocking. And they had to look for fifth-year senior Troy Pollard and true freshman Donovan Young to basically pick up the slack on that. And almost all the rushing yards in the second half, you know, were as a result of the option, which they suddenly brought back after, you know, a year being completely out of the offense. I have no idea which running back is going to be the hot hand. That's what they're going to try and ride. You've got Donovan Young, who is really fast, but also doesn't hold on to the ball very well. And you have Troy Pollard, who has breakaway speed, we think, but, you know, has had injury problems the last several years. So it's unclear if they're going to be able to rely on any one back to get a majority of the rushing yards. But it's pretty clear Nathan Shielhouse is going to run a lot, as much as people like me hate to see him sort of drop his passing acumen for, you know, more rush yards.
So do you see him as a guy who can be like a solid thrower? Because
yeah, absolutely.
Every time I see him, you know, well, obviously he can throw the ball. He has a passing completion rate over 70, I think, right now. Obviously, that's against, you know, questionable competition. But, you know, obviously he can throw, but it's always seemed to me like, whether it's his first instinct or, you know, on Saturday when they were all, you know, design option runs, and obviously, you know, the option isn't like always part of their system, but he does always seem to be like a guy where that's his you know, most important aspect. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, he was definitely recruited as a dual threat quarterback. But last year, you know, he made huge strides as the year went on as a passing quarterback. And earlier in the year, against South Dakota State and Arkansas State, he didn't need to run. It seemed every single time that he ran, it was a designed run. Now, when it got to be last week, it was check your open receiver, which is usually going to be AJ Jenkins. If he's not open, run. Yeah. Which is the old Juice Williams offense, which I think is a step back. I don't like to see that.
I always thought the Juice Williams offense was a little bit more check your open receipt, your first receiver, see if he's open, possibly throw it anyway.
Well, that was the whole hiccup. If it's, is he open or not? That's where Juice usually got caught up.
Well, Kane Coulter, like when you say, you know, against South Dakota State and Arkansas State, you know, we watch Kane Coulter, who's our, you know, athletic dual threat quarterback who wears number two and is a sophomore. The first week he looked pretty good passing, and then against Army, which isn't like a great defense, he just looked confused. Do you think that trend of, you know, Nathan Shielhouse being like a you know, great, you know, passer, like, and then maybe design runs is like a sustainable thing in Big Ten play?
I don't know. They've already played their backup quarterback, Riley O'Toole, who is a pure passing quarterback. He was recruited as a pure passer by Petrino, who doesn't generally use dual threat quarterbacks in his offenses. And on some key passing plays, we've already seen O'Toole. I think one of the reasons that Shielhouse can't sustain being a dual threat quarterback is the way he goes about running. He leads with his throwing shoulder, and he leads with his head, and he's already, you know, cramped up and gotten a bit, you know, knocked around, and it's affected his play. It affected his play in the second half against Arizona State, and it's all because he doesn't want to step out of bounds and doesn't want to slide. So something's got to give here.
We kind of had a similar thing with this guy named Dan Persa.
Oh, I recall Dan Persa.
Well, you don't recall him ever being a starting quarterback against Illinois.
No, not against Illinois.
Because he got injured, and guess what? He's back. How much of a – I guess how much of your idea of what's going to happen on Saturday depends on, you know, what the Dan Persa thing is?
I know Dan Persa can't – is definitely a great quarterback. I watched the Iowa game last year. He picked apart a very good defense with that drive. But my question is, if they're going to be one-dimensional, and it seems like Northwestern
is
last year at least, they were a bit one-dimensional.
We don't have a running back. You guys have four of them. It would be nice if you lent us one.
Sorry we're greedy like that.
Yeah.
But there are definitely opportunities in the secondary to take advantage of. Just look at last week against Western Michigan. The fast offense, up-tempo, quick slants. There's always going to be somebody open up against Illinois' defense.
And that's what we live off of.
Yeah. The problem is you can't take too long because Illinois' defensive line is, I think, very, very good. I think especially at defensive end, and they will get to the quarterback if they take too long. And if without a running game, I don't know what's going to keep those front seven honest, if not just selling out toward the quarterback.
Because what struck me is, you know, we talk about the how strong, you know, the run defense is. Maybe that's because, you know, all those teams don't have running attacks. But Arizona State is a team that, you know, throws the ball. And, you know, I mean, they put up yards, I think, but, you know, there were multiple picks and a lot of sacks.
Yes. And that was because Illinois was selling out against the passing game. Because the weird thing is, when Arizona State decided to run the ball, you know, they actually got yards. They had a running back with over 100 yards of rushing.
That's not going to happen with us, don't worry.
If you allow somebody like Buchanan the ability to not have to, you know, really bite on play action at all, they're going to just go after the quarterback. And I hope, for Persa's sake, that he can get rid of the ball quickly. Obviously, as an Illinois fan, I hope that not at all. But it could turn into another day where the quarterback is running around or on the ground a lot.
So,
on the other hand, if he could be on the ground after completing a long pass after finding a cornerback who was cheating. So it can go both ways.
So, obviously, it's Ron Zook, and you have no clue what's going to happen because of the nature of Zook. But off the top of your head, I guess, what are you expecting on Saturday?
I'm going to say low scoring, actually, because...
Really?
The way that Illinois is going to attack this game is probably going to be running the ball a lot, and that's going to eat up a lot of clock. And they're going to have, I think, long, sustained drives without big plays. So this is the sort of go-to score I've been going to this year, it seems like. 28-17, I think, would be a pretty reasonable guess in favor of Illinois. Because the defense will give up points, especially because the special teams is just pretty deplorable right now for Illinois. They're going to give Persis some very good field position. And he's probably going to at least get a touchdown or two out of it.
I actually completely... You can tell how bad a podcast this is because I don't remember what I said I thought the final score would be when I was talking to Loretta. But, yeah, Illinois is a good running team. Northwestern, A, gave up, all of those yards to Mikel LeSure and gang last year. So that's in the back of my mind. And B, we also just gave up 380 yards rushing to Army, who obviously only run the ball. But still, I'm not really convinced we can do the whole tackling thing. So I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of the one difference is I think Illinois might also have those players who can, see a hole and then turn it into a big play. So that might be the only counter I have to you saying that they're not going to be big plays. You're going to run the ball, and I don't think Northwestern's going to be able to stop it. I do feel very good about the Dan Persa thing. But I don't think Northwestern's going to pull it out. I think it's a possibility.
Well, before you give too much credit to the Illinois offense, keep in mind there have been some periods over the last 3 years where it's just gone completely dead. The second half against Arizona State, they did not get a first down until the fourth quarter. They spent the entire third quarter on three and outs. And they can do that. Like, the offensive line, usually very good run blocking. Sometimes they just stop blocking. I can't explain it. And if something like that happens, they can let a team like Northwestern back in the game. They let Western Michigan stay that close because they got down to, under 10 yards to go three times off of an interception or a huge play, but still had to settle for field goals. So as good as the Illinois offense seems at times, it can be very, very prone to just shooting itself in the foot and just shutting down for no reason.
I definitely have belief in the Dan Persa passing experience against the Illinois defense, though. I think he changes the complexion of the team, but right now I'm not confident that Northwestern's going to win. 28-17 sounds really good, but you kind of just said that.
That's so, okay. You can say it, too.
No, I'm going to come up with something more creative. You know what? Your kicker's going to shank an extra point. So
impossible.
27. Yes. He doesn't miss?
He doesn't
the
miss.
The Dimke?
He's made 21 straight kicks, I think it is right now.
All right. You're going to unnecessarily go for two at some point in time?
That is much more likely.
29-17?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll give us 20. 29-20, the most completely. I enjoy completely making things up on the spot and people listening to it. Yeah, so anyway, Joe, thanks for coming on. And the website is Hail to the Orange.
HailToTheOrange.com.
Shameless plug. Twitter handle?
Hail to the Orange.
At Hail to the Orange. Creative. Creative. I like it. Anyway, thanks for coming on. And I just feel like mentioning once again that because you're an Illinois fan, and this is the biggest and most obvious rivalry that either of our teams have, I hate you and your fan base, because the rivalry is so strong.
Absolutely. And I want that big Monopoly piece.
That big hat.
Trophy case.
Yes. If you guys walk away with the lol hat, as it's now called in our comments section. We want that piece. we will not let you pass go. We will not let you collect $200. And that's a podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And see you next week.